Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome Mark Dancy, who is a very accomplished entrepreneur and venture capitalist in the renewable and breakthrough energy area. He comes to us from the Philippines. He was in Hong Kong yesterday and reminded me I had great bandwidth. In the Philippines with not great bandwidth. We're going to be talking about creative destruction, launching a breakthrough or renewable energy product or other breakthrough product. And this is a topic that many members of our networks have requested that we address. Many of the scientists and engineers and inventors among you are grappling with this this issue as we speak. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And let's start by, if I could ask you to describe your background and how you came to your current evolution, and also describe a bit about your website and what we can find there.
Okay. I originally was trained as an industrial designer, engineer, but I somehow ended up in a university managing several of the commercial companies and bringing academic innovations and sometimes not so innovative products to market or businesses created them. And I then ventured into the worst form of capitalism, currency trading. I wasn't very happy there. Then one day my daughter said, "What's your generation going to do about the inequalities of the world and most of all about pollution and the environment?" And she was very serious about it. And I thought, yeah, she's right. And she said, "No, I'm not talking about your generation. I'm talking about you." And 3 weeks later, I'm in America investigating hydrogen technologies. And it took me on a journey around the world looking for technologies, both alternative and also exotic, if you call, and evaluating claims to see what's real, what's not real, and what had the potential to bring some changes. And that led me to here, potentially. I've worked in America, and now I'm in the Philippines. So I'm working in Asia on energy projects.
And tell us a bit about your Revolution Green and what we can find there.
Revolution Green is really, it's sort of a bit of a friendly side, a blog. A couple of people interested in free energy claims, the people who claim to have magnetic motors and other exotic technologies, and a lot of inventors who tinker with those things. And we also cover developments with solar, electric vehicles, and also the politics of energy. We like to cover try and point out what's real, what's feasible, what's a good idea, what's a bad idea, and what's changing, how the model of energy is evolving in the planet, and, what's going to bring about the paradigm shift, from going from fossil fuels into more sustainable energy environments. What's the geopolitical, what's the technology, and how all those things can work in together to bring about the paradigm shift.
Well, I get lots of, as you can imagine, I get lots of claims of fantastic different things. Whenever I want to check out if something's real or yeah, I just go to your website. And if it turns out it's yeah, I always get a great laugh. So I'm very much
there's a lot of yeah out there, unfortunately. The industry itself draws a lot of interesting characters. Some of them they're more interested in their bank balance, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, can you define for us quickly before we start, what is renewable energy and then what is, breakthrough energy or as you describe, more exotic technologies? Let's see if we can sort of describe or provide a framework for what it is you're dealing with.
With renewable, I'd say things where we're drawing from the environment in a friendly way, not mining coal or oil, where using the wind, we're using ocean energy, we're using sunshine that's available, and we're able to build sustainable energy systems. the real breakthrough there, what I call a breakthrough, will be when we get cheap storage so we can be fully independent of the grid and be able to drive the electric car a lot further. And there's massive developments and breakthroughs happening every day with storage, batteries and capacitors. On the other hand, what I call exotic technologies, that involves what we can call interesting people who are trying to invent from one extreme perpetual motion through different devices, buoyancy devices and magnetic motors, right through to where I call it more exotic, like the development of thorium technology.
Sorry, what kind of technology?
Technology like thorium nuclear is one I'd put in that category, which is a cleaner energy. Or materials-based technologies. I think the real breakthroughs are, I worked in a lab in Utah for 2 years where you're able to create materials that continually you're able to generate electricity when created. And I think you're going to see breakthroughs in those areas. And there's other ways of harnessing or harvesting the environment you don't even know about yet. And they're the exotic technologies.
Okay, so let's. I wanted to start with an overview of some of the risks. Any technology or project that that involves creative destruction of existing successful products and businesses, or you know, constituencies of a variety, which could include government and sort of political constituencies. Any project that involves creative destruction faces risks because you have a variety of players in the marketplace who have an interest in it not succeeding. And I wanted to talk about some of the traditionally the risks that have served as obstacles to people trying to launch such a product. And I wanted to start with one of my favorites, which is patents. Maybe you could address patents and what patents.
Patents are fascinating. I had a very in-depth discussion in Hong Kong yesterday with a manufacturer. And patents, if you've got a very interesting technology or exotic process, first of all, don't register in the US because if the government sees it could be beneficial use for the military, they can just take the technology, okay? So first rule of thumb, if you've got something interesting, register it overseas. Second rule is, don't register a patent because things can be copied, manipulated, changed, whatever, very, very easily by other companies. You're better off having trade secrets. Otherwise, don't tell them how you do it because when you publish a patent, you're telling everybody how to do it. The only patent I would recommend is one that covers a fundamental change in your science, like when a laser is invented. It's something that doesn't matter what they do, they're going to have to use that fundamental property. But on the other hand, they're registering a lot of electronic patents at the moment, which is an outside issue of the work. I might move away from the barking dog in a minute. we're able to protect some electronic circuit boards we developed at a super high efficiency because it required a lot of investment, and we need to protect the investors' investment, and these will bring about good change in the energy industry. So patents can be your best friend, and they can be your worst enemy. Your best friend, and they can protect you, but only to a limited degree, because if somebody copies you, you're in for a 10-year court case and $5 million. You know, Seriously, you're better off not telling people how to do it and let them try and figure it out.
Right, and going really fast. Why get bollocked up in the expense and time of patents?
There's a common term you use, and everybody talk to the manufacturers and that, they say it doesn't matter how many patents you got, they're going to get copied, whether it's in India, which steals Chinese patents, which is quite funny. The Chinese are complaining, hey, they're stealing our ideas. Guess what? You've been doing that for the rest of us for 50 years. So what we've got as a term is quick to market. The technology I'm working on now, which is a water-powered technology, it's no need for batteries anymore. We're bringing in a revolutionary portable power device technology. And we're going to release one product originally, and then everybody said no. You have to release a whole range, you know, 10 products, 8 products, 10 applications. I said, why? They said, to be copied, and before you get your other applications to market, everybody else would have them. And that's a commercial decision. I said, okay, you know, so it's first to market and fast to market.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about buyouts. Clearly, one of the things that happens, somebody comes up with a great product, it's working. The next thing you know, someone shows up offering a great deal of money to buy it and then sit on it. And part of that is if you have more than one decision maker, if you have a couple of partners, you know, it can certainly make crazy within the leadership team.
The venture capitalists, depending on the amount of capital they have to put in, always want control. First thing I do or advise others to do, license them and put in performance clauses. If somebody can, I've seen it actually, where a really great idea or energy device is suppressed for 5 years because somebody gave them a lot of money, had the rights to it, and did nothing with it. So what you've got to build in is two things. License the technology so you control the IP. Don't sell the IP. And make sure you've got controlling interest in the company that has the license. Let them have 100% control of the manufacturing, the distribution. That's fine. The second thing is build in a performance clause. If you do not perform and do this and this by this date, then you lose all rights and you lose your investment. The inventors have to protect themselves. And the other thing is the most common is people come in and promise the world but don't have the capital. So they give you a little bit of money, lock up the technology, and then they go and try and resell it to somebody else. And if they fail, you've missed out. And that is probably 80% of the time are the ones that fail. These other people get involved, get the rights to the technology, and then don't have a good business model or the experience, or they're just selling a whole lot of porkies.
It's funny. One of my subscribers many years ago said to me, you know, I'm pretty upset. My brother just got a job with a firm that specializes in mergers and acquisitions. And in fact, what he has discovered is their business model is to get into the company that needs to be acquired or needs to raise capital, get all their information, figure out how they can do something to smash them down. And then the big firms they're working with pick them up for cheap and they make their money on that spread between the price you would have had to pay if it was a legit deal and the price you can get by playing dirty tricks. So, you know, to me, you know, one of the things you got to do is from the beginning is only deal with people who are clean, you know, and that's tough because there's a lot of dirty players who would love to come in and get involved if they like the technology. Okay, so...
90% of the problem is finding the right venture capitalists or the right capital or the ethical capital people. It's a real battle. I'd say over the years, I got funding for two major projects now, but it took me about 5 or 6 years of burning your fingers to learn, okay, there's more due diligence needs to be done on the investors and who's investing and the motives why than the technology itself.
Right. So let's talk about how you raise capital. And one of the things, I'm particularly interested in is we're still waiting for the SEC to promulgate the crowdfunding rules, but I'm very interested to see what crowdfunding makes available. So talk a little bit about what are the successful routes to get capital when obviously you've got to be very quiet about what you're up to.
That's a bit tricky. You have to tap into networks. It took me several years to build up networks, but you can do it. But the quickest way to capital is to have a good business model. And we're doing one here in the Philippines, a solar farm at the moment. We want to do a big one and make it available to the people. And the way to attract the initial funding that's needed to build the infrastructure and that, we've already had the land donated, is to build a good business model. People want a ROI, you know, they want a good return on investment. And they can say, hey, we can give you 10, 15% ROI, here's the proven model, here's the figures, you know, and people will invest. And we've got a model where we're opening it up to small people, to large people, can invest by buying a solar panel and it sits on a farm and they get the benefits either financially or the electricity credits one way. That's one way, build a business model. The other thing, all inventors and all these people proclaiming they have great technologies, The number one thing is to have a working proof of concept. Not a whole lot of books of theory, not a whole lot of bollocks. You want a working proof of concept, and you want to have somebody with credibility, an institution, a scientist, an engineer, that will put their name to it. And if you do that, capital's pretty easy to find. The catch there, or the catch, is getting the terms you want then. And depending on how revolutionary the technology is, the capital is available. It doesn't take long to find the capital. But what everybody wants is a proof of concept. And why that is simple. There's so many scam artists out there that have taken millions of dollars. There's one in court in the US at the moment. The SEC is taking a free energy person to court. There's others have done time, jail time again. There's so many scam artists out there that investors are very weary. And from the investor point of view, you want to make sure that these people don't just listen to them, don't get caught up in the hype, don't get caught up in the cultist behavior. Make sure if you're investing in a technology that there's incredible evidence that some third party has provided that supports their claim. And then it's pretty clear. The only other thing I'd like to add that is, if you want to, one thing you don't want to do is upset people. So if you come in with a technology that's going to virtually shut down the oil industry or the coal mining or another energy interest overnight, you know, you want to make sure you partner those companies or players in those industries, because they can have a piece, you can make it, they can have a piece of the action, or they can have the distributing rights, or somehow they can get involved. They'll become your friend. But if they're not your friend, they'll become very, very powerful enemies.
Right. Right. And so building a network of constituencies, it's a little bit like building a campaign. You need to want to build as many people who want you to succeed as possible.
Absolutely. Indigenous thing is so, I'm sitting here in the Philippines going, this is the highest price electricity in Asia, third highest in the world. Panels are cheap. There's no tax for 7 years on that. Why isn't anybody doing it? And it's because the interests take control of the bureaucrats for that motorbike and the politicians. And then somebody, a politician's son, made the breakthrough. He started a company that suddenly put solar panels on shopping malls and farms, and then suddenly the Chinese come in and the French come in, and everybody's happy. But the politicians and existing corporations had to be happy first. Now it's really easy to do. So it's incredible what you have to do. And our farm now, three of the partners in this project, they spend the day with the bureaucrats and the politicians today. Sorry about that. That'll go in a minute. I live in an area where we don't have many cars, so everybody gets around on motorbikes. Phil called from Hong Kong. I was in the Crown Plaza. No.
Well, Mark, I've always believed that a lot, when you look at the economics of improvements in the energy model, in fact, the biggest profits are not on the energy. They are on the application. So if you look at a community, it's the value of the real estate if you bring the energy cost down. And I always thought the politically feasible way of getting a lot of this technology financed was if you brought the investor, because you said the right thing, have a good business model. You know, 90% of the people I meet in this area don't have a good business model and don't think it's important. And they don't respect the investor's needs as a result. So if you can put together a business model where, you know, the business is bringing in the energy application, making money on the real estate, enhancing the investment on the real estate, then you've got something where if it fails, you still got a reasonable investment in real estate. So the downside is significantly less. And I think the upside can be engineered to be greater than just doing the energy itself.
It's all about risk management. Like, you're right, with this farm, luckily we got the land donated, and that's the most valuable piece of the equation. It's able to provide an equity that if something fails, you're able to recover something. And
right.
That's important. with inventors, it's a little bit more difficult. That's why I say you need a proof of concept. If you're funding something, and most entrepreneurs and most angel investors in that will tell you this, they'll give you very little money if you haven't got a proof of concept. And they'll give you a few crumbs and whatever. Once you get the proof of concept done, suddenly the value, and you're in a good bargaining position, suddenly you might just peel off 10%. You don't have to give them 90% for a chunk and then put them under performance contract. But the other thing most inventors don't realise, you're right, 90% have no idea about business. You can't just go and say, I want $1 billion for my invention. I want $500 million. The real world says you've got to have achievable milestones, and it's got to be backed by a commercial model. What's the rollout? What's the ROI? What's the return on investment? And you have to be reasonable and work with these people because they need to get a return on investment. They don't have to get rich or anything, and you have to be reasonable about how quick that's achievable, what's the capital being used for, and if you're not respecting the investor's money, you're not going to get the investment, or you're going to get in jail, or you're going to get a really bad reputation quick. And I spend more time educating inventors with new ideas about the business model than the technology, because I've got to tell you, the business model and the politics of the industry that's going in, the energy industry, is very, very powerful. Look in the US now, and Australia even. The solar people now, the utilities going, wow, it's got cheaper to put solar panels on than use our power in some states in Australia. So suddenly they lobby the government, all the subsidies get pulled back. That's the first step. And you're going, wow, they're still buying the solar panels. They're going to have independence. We can't have that. So now they're bringing in penalties for being independent. You know, if you've got solar on the roof, we're going to charge you a tax. So right. You've really got to work through all those issues. And I'm using an alternative energy model, but the same goes for exotic technology. You just can't bring out something and shut the rest of the world down or that industry down. You've actually got to try and find ways that everybody's a winner. So you might use the workforce or the distribution setup or the skill sets that those industries have already got. You might want to partner with them, you know, rather than say, ha-ha, I've shut you down. You might want to utilize their strong strengths and work with the industry rather than act as their enemy.
Right, because they've built and know how to operate a successful business model. They've done it.
Exactly.
And they have a lot of knowledge. Okay, so let me just talk about some of the more gruesome risks, and there are a couple of them, and I'll run through them. One of them is, as soon as you sort of get in this area, a lot of flaky people show up. And some of them are flaky because they're not ethical. Some of them are flaky because they're not competent. And some of them are flaky because they've been paid to sabotage things. And so how do you get rid of the fruit flies?
There's a lot of flaky people there. Most of the flaky people, the financial people, come and pretend they've got money or they've got an interest and all that. No, it doesn't, you know, and they want to give you a lot of money and want to do that. You're better off licensing stuff out or working with a big company or established group. But you might get a good angel investor who wants to help you. How do you evaluate those people? You really need to do your due diligence or get somebody to do your due diligence. And who are you in bed with? Did you meet them at a hotel or an airline? Or are they a reputable company? Are they a client of Perkins or somebody? Are they somebody who are well-known entrepreneurs, well-known institution, or, you know, a rich person who's got a bent for doing those things? You've got to be very, very sure who what you're doing. So it's about due diligence. That's how you get rid of them. You need to do your due diligence. But most people, they just see dollars in their eyes and they sign anything. I just saw technology in Europe that they're claiming this and that, and yet people signing contracts and there's no performance in there. So if it doesn't work, you've got no legal recourse on your money. And there's a big slight investment community. Sort out investors. The other one is all the flaky experts, the so-called self-professed physics experts, chemical experts, or industry experts. And I think you know a couple of characters in the exotic energy or free energy field. I mean, if you look at their personal lives, you go, my God, you know, they might be arrested for this or they've been involved in that. So those sorts of people and the scam artists that come with them, really, once again, it's due diligence. Be careful. Ask questions. Check up backgrounds. I mean, go and get independent advice. Don't trust their lawyers. Get your lawyers to check it out. In
right.
third category, I think a few years ago, there was a bit of, definitely a little bit of, you know, hanky-panky going on and people being threatened and all that. I think that's died out now because a lot of the new technologies are now accepted and have sneaked up on industries before they could do anything about it. Solar is cheaper than coal at the moment. And the investment community and the banks now investing in solar, wind, that are making money out of it. So suddenly it's legitimate.
Right.
But
the real money is clearly, yeah, the real money is clearly shifting in. So, you know, it's almost like howdy doody time is over and now the adults are moving in.
Yeah. But if you rode up with a solar panel at the cost it is now, you probably would have been shut down 20 years ago. Somebody would have shut you down. They would have either bought you out, bought the technology out, or something would have happened. Now it's sort of happening by stealth. So there's not so much of the threat anymore. I think one reason why that is the need is growing. People know they're limited resources, so they're looking for answers. And if you partner the big corporations, you partner the governments, involve them, or somehow involve people, the ones who could nasty people, if you can involve them, they won't hurt you. They'll become your friend. If you
right.
have many of them, they will hurt you. And they may not
right.
hurt you directly, but in Asia they probably would. It doesn't cost much to snuff somebody out sometimes. But if you don't hear them, you know, first thing we did when we evaluated the business model and what we're doing, even just with the solar and the mine industry, we said, whose toes can't we tread on? Which politicians, which bureaucrats do we have to go and see? Who do we have to make happy first? That was our approach. Because in
right.
if you're set on toes, you will not succeed. So how
right.
can we appease everybody? Once we've got a model, then you work on the rest. That's a business
right.
model.
So,
how do we appease everybody so they're not going to hurt them and they can benefit?
Right. Okay, so talk a little bit about what, to date, what has worked and why. Let's talk about the projects, not the risk, but where are the products and projects that have succeeded?
Okay, I think the whole world can see a big paradigm shift. I'll talk about renewables first. Solar is now, in many countries, just booming. Over here in the Philippines, it's just all of a sudden there's nothing, and now it's every major company and country is coming in and laying out solar fasting that can make the panels, actually China, all major industries. Wind power. You know, Germany's 53% wind and power and solar power now, 30-something percent. My home state in Australia the other day ran the whole state for a whole day on wind and sun power alone, and they sold the fossil fuel power to the neighbouring state. They still have the generators ticking over just in case. So it seems like paradigm shifts on how things are moving forward, and it's accepted. And when the storage technologies get cheaper, Tesla just announced, you know, look what he's done with the cars, look what they're doing with home power supplies now. Everybody in 5 years, it'll be cheaper to connect to the grid, cheaper to be independent of the grid, or be involved in a community microgrid, or be part of a renewable energy project than it will to be connected to the grid. So that's a big
right.
change. And the bankers and the governments, now, you know, Asian development banks and the European banks, they're not backing coal mines anymore. You want to go and borrow money to build a new coal mine, that's how you get lost. You want to build a wind farm, they'll have the checkbooks out, provided you've got a half-decent business model. Because they've now got proven business models that are working, and they're getting a higher return on renewables than they are on fossil fuels. Look at the recent oil prices. Look what's happening in the coal industry. Look at the mining resources. And America has cut their way to energy independence. You've got so much gas on capped wells now, you don't have to go and invade another country. You know,
right.
it's cheaper to use the gas now to go and invade an Arab country or somewhere where there's oil. So that's worked, and the model's growing, and it's gathering speed. On the exotic side, I've got some sort of good news and bad news. The bad news is none of these devices, magnetic motors, buoyancy machines or any free energy or over-unity devices to date have ever came up and been able to be tested or used or put in production to better at work. However, there's a few anomalies that are very interesting. One is what they call LNER, low-energy nuclear reactions. And a lot of institutions and scientists now are very interested in that because they're seeing this result and it's not consistent. And they're trying to understand how we're getting more energy out. Cold fusion, it's a form of cold fusion. How are we getting more energy out than not? And when they crack the code and understand it and know how to engineer it, that will be a breakthrough. It really will be. And then there's the material sciences. There's more and more materials, especially graphene now. They're learning more about graphene and other materials. It may be possible to create materials and energy devices using material science. I think I demonstrated one in that conference where where I had a disc and it's continuously been producing electricity for over a decade. And it's got everybody stumped. So those technologies, when we can figure out how to extract more power out of those, they're going to be the future.
But well, part of it, if they can ever make graphene, if graphene can become economic or materials like that, the other thing is it radically reduces the energy you need for an amazing number of functions.
Yes, well, just this year there's been four or five major breakthroughs of making graphene affordable and mass produced. And I expect in the next two or three years it will be as easy as to make as any other material. See, a lot of money is being poured into energy storage, battery research, tens of billions of dollars a year, and also graphene. And the marriage of the two, in fact, there's a big relationship between graphene, efficiency of energy, and also storage of energy. These materials are leading the way. And I really believe you probably will never see a breakthrough if somebody's invented a perpetual motion machine. You know, and I've investigated hundreds of them. You know, I spent 40 flights one year, 22 international investigating magnetic motors, and I blew a lot of money, and I've seen friends blow millions investigating all these claims, and none of them ever worked. We're not saying it can't be done. We're just saying today, everything we've seen hasn't worked. But on the other side of the coin, they're seeing some real magic. They're seeing this LNER, low-energy nuclear reaction, which is materials technology and the process. We're seeing new materials emerging that are magical. It's like the crystals. It's like certain combinations of materials, when we put them together, suddenly producing energy. And then you're seeing, because of this technology, the materials, sorry, not a motorbike, the materials, you're seeing solar panels becoming, you know, what have they gone from $4 a watt to manufacture to below 50 cents a watt? I can now buy a kilowatt of solar panels for $500 over here. You know, 5 years ago, that was, you know, $5,000 10 years ago. So you're seeing, because of materials technology, a dramatic cost reduction in the capital cost of establishing these new technologies.
Right. So if you look, I'm constantly listening to people who are doomsayers, you know, the end of the world is coming, the economy is going to collapse. And one of the things I see is if we can just project out 5 years to the natural evolution of the things you're talking about, what we're talking about is absolutely massive increases in productivity. Massive.
Yes. Well, when you say productivity, can you just define that? What area?
In bringing down either the environmental or ecosystem cost of doing something or a product, and bringing down the economic cost. And so making all sorts of, so making, if you can make a car with graphene or, you know, a much lighter material that's as strong, if not stronger, then you dramatically reduce the energy costs of that equipment. So that's an example. Or with solar and battery, dramatically bringing down the energy. 40% of manufacturing costs in the United States are energy. If you cut that in half, you dramatically improve the productivity of those manufacturing processes.
I'm going to give you a really, really important message or an example, okay? Norway, New Zealand is 90% self-sufficient of energy now. Norway is 90% is renewable. Germany, everybody's criticizing this. Wow, it's costing a lot of money to go renewable energy and solar and wind and do away with coal and nuclear. If you think about 10 years' time, look at the cost of energy now, how it's climbing, electricity and all that. And you think about manufacturing, and the biggest cost in this country, and you're quite correct, in the world, now is now becoming the energy cost. So if you've got spare energy, if you've got solar energy, if you've got wind energy, it costs a lot now because of the investment and setting up the networks to control it and the storage. But in 10 years, the countries that are going to have massive renewable energy, they don't have to import gas, coal, or nuclear, or any other resource from any other country. And then the manufacturing industry is going to be laughing because they're going to be paying a quarter or third of the price. In Dubai at the moment, they're building a massive solar farm. They've got the cost of generation of the solar farm is way below what they can. They've got free oil, basically. It's way below what it can generate using fossil fuels and oil. So your solar and wind, the countries that are investing now, China's got a massive expansion of renewables, and they're not sitting because they know the countries that are going to have huge manufacturing advantage over everybody else will be the ones that have renewable energy and relying on in 10 years while the rest of the world's fighting over the resources and pushing the prices up.
Right.
It's crucial. If your country is going to survive, whichever country it is, it has to have cheap energy. And the only way to have cheap energy in the future is not having the resources being consumed.
Okay, so let's turn to, I want to talk about some leadership issues, because I think that before we started, let me just ask you, Mark, because I think dealing with these issues right now is generally harder and more difficult in most places than the United States. The United States' economic environment is much less free, much less innovative, much more centrally controlled. If you were going to launch a product like this, where would you be based? If you were in the United States, would you be based someplace? What's the ideal place in the world to bring these kinds of projects to market?
Not the U.S. The U.S. is always a secondary market.
Right.
Because of the politics and the difficulties and the obstacles that will be put in your way by corporate powerhouses or corporations or by the government, who are controlled by corporations to a degree. Okay? You need to be somewhere that's friendly. And I'll mention a few countries. Europe is a good place because they're hungry for alternative energy and accept it. I mean, the Green Party controls a large part of German politics. So you've got to go to countries. In Asia now, for instance, you actually hit a key point that's really scary. The innovation, a lot of accountants and bean accountants in America now, a lot of the companies that grew on innovation in America are shutting down their engineers, designers, their innovation centers to save costs. And it's been putting the pressure on the manufacturers here in Asia and other countries to provide that innovation now. And so you're going to lose, or America's going to lose, the wonderful thing that built America, which was innovation, being the best at innovation. And it's all coming, and these companies are saying, we can't be an OEM anymore, or manufacturers say, here's the design, produce it. They all have to be OEMs, developers now. And I was with a company yesterday that was just magnificent. They're a world leader in the technologies we're working with lighting and sound and everything. And they were forced in that position 10 years ago because the client said, unless you're doing our development and innovation, you no longer have our account. So there's this mass transfer of innovation going from America for short-term balance sheet equations to make some accounting executive look good for his annual bonus, to where it's the long-term now, the innovation has gone to India, it's gone to Europe, and it's gone to Asia, especially Asia. And that's going to be a big, I know we're off energy now, but that's going to be a big failing. Apart from countries that can have cheap energy, the countries that are going to thrive and survive are going to have the innovation. And that innovation is being driven into Asia at the moment from the countries with a lack of foresight.
Right. And I, you know, there's nothing that makes me sadder than hearing that, but that's certainly the message I'm getting, you know, from everywhere around the world. And it's one of the reasons I'm on a plane tomorrow to Australia and New Zealand for a month. So, and I'm disappointed you won't be there, so I can't see you.
Yeah. Australia is a good place to do innovation. New Zealand's probably better, especially energy. But Australia now, the current government, has pulled all the subsidies away. Yeah, the recent one of economics, that's Russia and China were there, where they're pushing renewables. Australia's trying to push coal still. The Prime Minister is so far out of touch. So he's pulled all the solar subsidies. He's pulled all the renewable energies. He's made it hard. You know what's happened? The real change that's coming will not be politically driven anymore, because the alternative energies, whether it be exotic or whether it be renewable like solar, have got that cheap. It's an economic and business environment that's bringing the change now. And I'm sitting back laughing going, who would have thought 10 years ago that major banks, corporations and industry investing in solar in such a big way, and wind and all the rest, and it divesting themselves of coal and other interests as fast as they can. And what happened was the government, previous government in Australia, got enough people, so there's a critical mass. In my home state now, 20% of all rooftops have solar, and they've got enough wind energy to drive about 50% of the state's power, and it gained enough critical mass that it doesn't matter what the government does, okay, the people, this can't stop now. And since they've got storage, as soon as the storage, and this is what's holding everything back, if we had a cheap form of storage now for car batteries, for instance, for electric cars, they're very close to the threshold where why would you want to have a gasoline car anymore? You can power, you can, you know, go and put your solar panels up, charge your Tesla car, and provided those batteries can come down, it'd be far cheaper to manufacture an electric car. In Norway, for instance, 20% of all car sales are now electric, and they're plugging them into their windmills, and they've got many solar panels up there, they're plugging them into their windmills. So the economic environment's changing where the governments can bring in these taxes and poo-poo stuff and withdraw the subsidies, but the part of that, they're going to say this year and last year is the year where government's no longer relevant anymore. The economics that are going to drive the paradigm shift are that, you're mad. Like in the Philippines here, every major mall are putting the whole roofs are all solar. And one reason is the government did help there. They said, if you don't have solar on the roof, you're going to have to turn your air conditioners up. And I said, ooh, don't like that. So they're putting solar on. But it's now better and economic to put solar on, because if they put solar on, they're doing PPAs. So a company comes along and says, I'll put 2 megawatts of solar or 500 kilowatts of solar on your roof. You just promise to buy the power, and I'll be 20% cheaper than what you're paying for electricity now. So where do I sign? And the investors who are financing that are getting 15 to 20% return. That's huge. Where else do you get that? You don't get that in the bank anymore. And then, you know, where do you get 15 or 10% return? Let's say 10% return. Or you're getting an ROI. Typically, the project we just costed out, the ROI is less than 5 years. So investors get good returns. And then the clients, you're saying, well, if I put solar power on, that means during the day when I'm paying the most for my electricity, and we have the brownouts because we don't have enough electricity, I'm going to get my power forever and ever 20% less than the current market. Where do I sign? So the economics is driving the paradigm shift. The demand, like the Philippines, and just giving you one model, is absolutely being driven by economics, no longer being driven by government.
That's fabulous. So the energy model on planet Earth, the next 5 years, what do you think is going to happen?
This is the exciting bit. I've been watching this for years, and 10 years ago there was no solar, hardly any wind and a few things. What's going to happen with the energy model? There's going to be big imbalances of the haves and the have-not in 20 years' time. The countries have got natural resources to burn and gas and that, like the US, you've got a lot of gas there. They're going to be okay. You fracked your way into energy survival. I don't know about the environment. I'm just giving you the energy balance. But I think what's going to happen is in about another 10 or 15 years, you're going to see countries that suddenly realize, holy crap, they're competing against us because they've got cheap energy and renewable energy. We're all going to get on the bandwagon. But what's going to really change everything, at the moment, solar's gaining momentum, wind's gaining momentum, electric cars are gaining momentum, all of the renewable energies, environment-friendly energies are gaining momentum. The thing that's going to be absolutely the thing that's going to smash it out of the park and the game's over is when they can get that storage technology a little bit cheaper. Tesla's putting in a $5 billion factory in the U.S. I think it's going to make a lot of money out of that, and that's halfway there. But there's 30 or 40 technologies right now in the labs that have proven that they can get that energy storage cost so you can drive your car for 1,000 miles and it's not going to cost you any more than a gasoline-powered car to buy. That technology exists now. It's in the labs and it's 3 to 5 years away from full commercialization. And what that means to the householder and the independent people is that you'll be able to put solar panels and storage on your roof, not a little bit cheaper. At the moment, it's about grid comparable. It's going to be, if you've got a new housing estate or a new building block going up, it's going to be like, you're crazy if you don't do it. So the big shift in the energy balance is that renewables are going to gain massive momentum. It's going to be a graph that's going to shoot up out of the sky in the next 3 to 5 years when the storage technology is available that makes it economically viable. So I'm excited. You might tell by my voice, I'm excited. I'm going, wow, this is cool. This is a great time to be living. There's massive problems in the world, but energy is going to be one that's going to sort itself out in the next 20 or 30 years.
So, and what about, so if that happens with the storage, when does material sciences kick in and really shift it again?
Well, the material science is going to bring about the storage revolution.
Ah, okay.
And where does it fit again? That's one thing. But with exotic technologies, I'm going back to researching. I spent the better part of 10 years, and I've got a lot of people I know did the same as what I did, search the world for these technologies, and we come up with a lot of blanks, a lot of wild goose chases. But I think in the next 2 or 3 years, I'm going back next year, once I finish this project, to researching, not the solar project, my full-time income is these water technologies, which is going to have a big impact on the third world. You know, we've got product now being tooled up for where we can free, you know, here's something that everybody forgets. The biggest slaves for the fossil fuel and the multinationals are the 1.6 billion people in the world that don't have access to electricity. So guess what they're using? Kerosene, okay? In India alone, 1 million burns or accidents a year. The tuberculosis rate is 10 times higher in these huts and the fires and all the rest. They're enslaved. The multinationals have got the third world enslaved. Solar rechargeable lighting is now making a huge impact and giving independence to these people. We're bringing out a technology that runs at a tenth of the cost and it's using very renewable materials, totally pollution-free, and they can charge their phones and that. So you're seeing another revolution happening, and we're using material science, and we're doing away with batteries. We're just going to use salt water and a metal that's very renewable, not harm the environment. And then we're going to not only apply that in the third world, we're putting it through every consumer good you can imagine, radios, flashlights, everything you can imagine. So There's several angles. We're coming from the low-end battery consumer point. Then you've got the solar panels and the high-end. Then you've got electric cars. And the materials technology is going to have the big impact. When's it going to kick in? It's having an influence now on lowering the cost of solar, of windmills, and storage. But where is it going to be that it's a power source in itself? I'd say about 5 to 7 years. But it takes that long to fully develop those technologies.
Okay. Well, Mark, in closing, just give us a little bit more on how to follow your work and keep posted with you. If there are people here who want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it? Should they do it through your website?
I have my email address there. I've got an interesting mix of, I've probably got 50 or 60 friends around the world who are little backyard inventors, and then I've got scientists I deal with in universities, and I love having that diversity because there's no license or there's no ownership of innovation. Sometimes it's the guy in the backyard who comes through with the most spectacular discovery. Sometimes it's at a university or an institution. But get in contact with revolution-green.com is the website. I post stories when I get time. My email address is just markdansey@gmail.com. And I always respond to emails from anybody within a day or two. I do get quite a few. As far as what I
would imagine that your email would be exploding.
It's funny, it comes in phases, you know, a couple of days are quiet, the next thing you've got 30 sitting there and you have to work through them. But I value everybody. And one thing I did when I travelled, I may be dealing with some of the best scientists and universities in the world, but then I'm also walking in somebody's backyard workshop. And I always found not to be snobby, not to be saying, well, I'm educated at Yale, but sometimes a guy down the backyard's actually got more innovation, creativity,
right.
Imagination.
Absolutely.
Than the guy educated at Yale. And it's a marriage of two. We're about educating those people into understanding measurements and technology. But the other thing, my work that I'm doing now, which has been going on for 2 or 3 years with web technology, they're about to be released later this year worldwide. And I'm going to say, watch this space. Filming's just been done in the US. I'm under NDA. And there's a lot of money involved from, you know, investors who've backed it and developed it. It's multi-$1 million. And what I thought was a backyard project, when I met you, I said, yeah, look at this flashlight, runs on water and runs off this. I thought, this is good. I'll have it out in 3 months. But suddenly we realized to do it properly, it's going to involve a lot of professional people, a lot of engineers. Just the circuit boards cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop. Gearing up the manufacturers, but we all had to do it under the cover. We had to do it by stealth mode. But watch this space, because seriously, and I just filmed one of the products in America last week, ready for release. They've got things are going to happen, but I'm not at liberty to disclose that because we mentioned something before, honoring the investors' money. And I have to honor and protect the investors.
Yes, absolutely.
My own work, follow me on Revolution Green, the products and projects I work on, just watch the media in the next 12 months.
So I have to give you a compliment before you go, because when I first met you, you know, I never know when I meet people what I think of them, and I discovered very quickly that you have an utter intolerance for charlatans and frauds. And if you've ever been a successful investor, you know that you can get everything right, and all you need is one ding-dong who can ruin everything. and I have a...
To the public.
Go ahead.
No, you speak. The conference you met me at, I was there, I asked them, why did you invite me? I ranked as the number one world skeptic for this. Nobody's going to talk to me. I want to be booed in this. And I said, no. Yeah, I said, so why are you inviting me? And they said, you're the only one who can actually bring two working devices.
Well, you know, there's a big difference between... Yeah, there's a big difference between having a technology and having a product that's reliable in the marketplace that can be duplicated on a reliable and consistent basis. Big, big difference.
Yeah. And there's a huge difference. And also the economic viability of technology. You know, I've seen some great technologies that, you know, are you going to pay $50,000 to be able to power your torch or your refrigerator? It's just not viable. We can build technologies for it. You're better off going buying a solar panel and buying a car battery and running it, you know. You've got to look at the viability of these technologies, and there's some very exotic things that are very interesting. You know, on paper now, I could build you a technology that would probably run an appliance in your house forever, never stop for 1,000 years. But you haven't got the $5 million it's going to cost us to build it. So what do you do with that technology? You have to show it. It's there. We know it works, but it's never going to happen. So you've got to look at the economics as much as the technology.
Right.
And you've had extensive experience. I was looking at your CV and I'm thinking, oh, we've both done a bit with housing. You've done more than a bit, but, you know, I was in public housing. You've been in Hong Kong. And, well, you're right. The biggest thing I can do to help everybody is to get rid of the charlatans, point them out, so when serious stuff comes up, that the investment community say, oh, that's not just one of those things again, you can say, no, this is serious. And try and expose these frauds helps all the legitimate people who are working in this industry, be it an institution. And by the way, universities can, they can exaggerate what they've got too. Scientists are great saying, we've made a big breakthrough. Then you read the fine print. Yes, in 15 years' time, it might be economically viable.
Okay?
You have to read it. And I've said investment money. People want to believe so much. They just want to believe that they'll throw money at anything without doing due diligence. They'll believe anything they're told. And that's the sad state of affairs.
Well, you know, I've seen this. I just have to say, you know, there's something about when you deal with something which is powerful, whether it's political power or technological power, it causes people to lose their minds. I can't tell you, I'm sure you've had this more, Mark, but I can't tell you how many presentations I've sat in with someone who really believes they've got some incredible technology, and it has caused them to literally lose their mind and exhibit absolutely no understanding of how the fundamental economy and the governance system on planet Earth works. You know what I mean? They announce they're going to, you know, bring this product to market, and they're going to be worth trillions of dollars, and they're going to control the whole energy model on the planet. And you just think they've lost their minds.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
My job, and I do have a lot of inventors who consult with me, and I do it freely. I don't charge them. I educate them on this. They say, what should I do with this technology? They say, get a lawyer, get a license, don't do this, don't do that, but be realistic. Don't think you're going to get $10 billion tomorrow. Maybe worth that one day to you or the company. But you've got to do things in small steps. You've got to reach the milestones. And as you reach those milestones, you've got to be realistic. And these people in Gaga land, and it just drives me totally insane. And the industry, even the solar industry now, I mean, look at the power of government. The Americans is, we just slap higher tariffs on Chinese panels or the states, different states.
Right.
If people got solar panels, you're going to have to tax them. Hang on. They're getting that electricity for free from the sun, and you've got a sun tax on them now. So introducing sun tax, you can't have that. They've got to get tax out of it, and this is going to be a big threat to the governments, okay? If such an electric car that can be powered by the sun or we've got another exotic technology in there powering it, how the government's going to get the revenue? So they're not going to tax the fuel. What they're going to do is start taxing the miles you're driving. So they'll put a GPS device and everything else in your car, and you're going to be paying the same tax as you was with fuel because you're going to be tracking the miles you're doing. And that's how they're going to do it.
Right. Well, as the old infrastructure loses market share, it's going to be – I mean, if you look at how the utility grid and the laws around utilities have been set up, you can see that there's a great deal of money being spent to try and make sure as this comes, the utilities continue to lock and control and maintain a cash flow to support their infrastructures. So there's definitely a major issue coming to a head, which is who's going to get the benefit of the savings? Is it going to be the utilities or is it going to be the customer?
Well, the battlegrounds are drawn in the US, okay, and other countries, and the battle is between energy independence and the consumer and having their own system versus the utility. The governments, corporations that are definitely fighting for survival. And then I looked in the Philippines here and I said, why? Well, the solar's happening, you know, so there's only three people controlling it. There's only three corporations who are going to benefit and make billions of dollars. So suddenly, we're working with the politicians and the government saying, okay, what if we do a model where everybody can own solar and they don't have to go through 6 months worth of bureaucracy, they don't have to, and they only sign one form and it'll be managed for them. And if they move past, they don't have to shift it with them. They suddenly found out a way of doing this. But the full
market economics. What an amazing idea!
and then we've got this incredible generous person who's going to give us. Got to be proud of them and donate the land and it make this all happen. But we have to make sure that everybody's appeased first and smoothed over. So suddenly things happen to us or anything else. And really, you have to fear that, you know, in some countries. Like, the easiest way to stop this threatening them is just to stop you, literally. I mean, it's sending flowers and a card to my family. So we're working with them now. And then we suddenly figured out, no politician can do this because every politician wants to be for the people. So this project is called Power for the People, and it means all people will be able to participate in solar energy.
Will we be able to read about it, or can we find it through Revolution Green description?
Give me a month on that one, because we got all the documents done, the business plans are being created, and the politicians were visited at the moment. But that model, I'm going to send you a copy. I'll email you a copy straight away. I'll send you a little presentation. But what it means is, rather than the big corporations controlling everything where the battlegrounds are set in the US, they want to own the solar farms, you know, because they can keep charging you for electricity and making a lot of profit, okay? They don't want to get away from shutting down the coal plant. They don't want you to have a power plant on your house. How can you make money? It's
right.
We come up with this model that's so simple. And it's a one-page contract, and people can either take the electricity or investment, and we're talking ROIs of 5 years, 20% returns, and house. What we're doing, this is simple. We're putting a panel on a farm. You own the panel. We might get 5% a year to polish it and plug it in and all the rest. And we actually work the business model that the big people want to build farms can come to our farm, because we've already got the land, we've already got the big plug into the grid. It's actually cheaper than trying to do it all over themselves, employing expensive European consultants. So where it's mum and dad, company, we're going to have this facility for them. And what we're trying to do is set up a model that bypasses government, bypasses everything. Okay.
Right.
So being the people, whether you're in a high... See, another problem in Asia, you've been in Hong Kong. Oh, no, you've been in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You're educated there.
Yeah.
Hong Kong people live in high-rises. Nearly everybody, what, 95% of the population must live in high-rises there, okay?
Yeah.
How do you put solar panels on for them? There's only a little bit of enough space for two apartments up the top for solar panels. But if you've got a farm and those people can own that power or get credited for the power generated by the farm to their bill or receive a financial income, doesn't matter if they move house, move apartments, change business premises, it goes with them. It's portable. And because of the economy of scale, of not having to put a meter in and somebody climbing on your roof, and the cost of installation is half because we're just banging panels on the road. And we're going to have a good deal with the supplying one power company, because they've got enough power now and there's legislation what we get paid. That model is applicable everywhere, New York, any country in the world. And that's what I think, if we can get the model right. It's been done before. It's not original here, but nobody's really got it on a grand scale. If you get the model right, then you throw that into the battlefield in America. What in the hell are they going to do? What are the politicians going to do about that? They're screwed. So you've got to come up with more imaginative and better business models that can counter anything that might be thrown at you.
Right. Exactly. Okay, well, Mark, this has been unbelievably fascinating, and I agree with you. I think the energy model is in for some big evolutions over the next 5 to 10 years, and I'm sorry you're not going to be in Australia, but if you change your mind and find yourself in Sydney, will you let me know?
I certainly will. I'll get back to the States again soon, but one thing I want to mention, this is a catchphrase. You mentioned one of mine here. One of my catchphrases, show me the data. So when I see an energy claim, they'll say, show me the data, and show me how you got the data. That's just as important.
I just wanted to make one little catchphrase, which is so true. Energy is the currency of the future. It really is. And
what is? Say it again.
Energy
is the currency of the future.
Yes. And you better believe it, because the people who have cheap energy and renewable energy will be the ones that will be the prosperous players in the future. And everybody knows this. It's no longer the oil barons. It's no longer the coal. Well, the oil's got a few years to go yet.
Okay, well, Mark, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this Lawyer Report. It's been a fascinating conversation. You have a great day, okay?
I'll go to bed so I can. Thanks a lot. It's nice to talk to you.
Bye.
I'm a big fan of yours, actually. I'm a big fan of yours, Catherine, so take care. Cheers, everybody.
I will. Bye.